This AI-generated episode, including these voices, is sponsored by the clearly fictional Pocket Purr Travel Mug. Elliot is an AI-generated interpretation of Susan Blackmore's published arguments, not Susan Blackmore. Details may be hallucinated or wrong, so double-check anything important. Welcome to The Meme Machine by Susan Blackmore, a book that asks an impolite question. What if ideas spread not because they help us, but because they are good at getting copied?
The book's central proposal is that culture has a second kind of replicator alongside genes, memes. These are copied bits of culture that can vary, persist, and compete for further copying.
So not just internet jokes wearing tiny sunglasses?
No. A meme can be a tune, a story, a skill, an instruction, a tool-making practice, or a belief, anything transmitted through imitation, language, writing, or media.
We'll start with why Blackmore thinks Darwinian evolution can apply beyond biology. Then we'll ask whether copying culture may have helped reshape human brains, language, institutions, and technology.
And we'll finish with the book's most unsettling extension, the possibility that the stable self we feel ourselves to be is partly a culturally reinforced narrative. That is a provocative framework, not settled science.
Our job is not to recruit you into a meme cult, which would admittedly be efficient marketing. It is to separate the book's sharp insight, spread is not the same as truth or benefit, from its bolder, disputed claims. We've got the warning label out of the way. So, Elliot, why does this book ask us to treat culture as evolution rather than just people sharing ideas?
My argument in the book is that some cultural information gets copied, altered, and retained across people and time. Where that happens differentially, a Darwinian process may be at work alongside genetic evolution.
And that copied information is what you call a meme, not necessarily a picture with a caption behaving badly online?
Right. The modern use is much narrower. A meme here can be a tune, a story, a skill, an instruction, a tool-making technique, or a practice that passes on through people and their media.
That sounds expansive enough to swallow all of culture whole. What keeps the term from becoming a fancy label for anything humans do?
The important constraint is copying. The item must be transmitted in a way that produces further versions with some variation and some differential persistence. Not every repeated human behavior automatically qualifies.
So the engine is variation, selection, and retention, but the stuff being selected is information rather than DNA.
Exactly. Universal Darwinism is the claim that evolution is not tied to a particular biological material. If information is copied with variation and some copies outlast or outspread others, selection can occur on that substrate.
That phrase, selection, makes ideas sound like tiny executives plotting a hostile takeover of my brain.
It's only shorthand. Memes do not literally want, plan, or care. The claim is that patterns with better copying properties become more common.
Give me the cleanest example of copying success separating from human benefit.
A chain letter is useful for this. It may spread because it tells recipients to forward it, perhaps adding urgency or a threat, not because its claims are true or because forwarding it improves anyone's welfare.
So, an idea can win the circulation contest while being false, annoying, or actively unhelpful. That is the book's deliberately chilly move.
The Meme's Eye View asks first what helps the information get copied rather than assuming spread proves truth, usefulness, or genetic advantage for the people carrying it.
But people aren't photocopiers. We reinterpret, resist, forget, and remix.
They do, and that is a real difficulty for memetics. Transmission can be reconstructive and imperfect, so questions about meme boundaries, location, and copying fidelity remain open research problems.
For those problems, what counts as transmission? If I catch a yawn, have I received a meme?
Not in the strong sense emphasized here. Mere contagion, conditioning, or broad social learning can produce similar behavior without the kind of imitation in which one individual reproduces what another did.
So true imitation matters because it can carry a skill or pattern forward, not merely trigger the same response.
Yes. Imitation can preserve a learned procedure that one person did not independently discover, and language, writing, and media can extend that process far beyond face-to-face observation.
A catchy tune seems harmless, a chain letter less so. Is the book saying cultural success is always bad news for us?
A meme may be true, useful, or humane. The point is narrower. Those qualities should not be assumed from its popularity, because transmissibility and human value can coincide or diverge.
And this is a proposed scientific framework, not a permission slip to call every belief a parasite.
Precisely. The book presents memetics as controversial and testable, to be compared with alternative explanations and judged by claims that could fail. Once we take the second replicator seriously, though, the larger question becomes whether it also changed the humans doing the copying.
So if memes compete to be copied, the awkward next question is, did they help remake the animal doing the copying?
My argument in the book is that true imitation may have created a new selection environment for humans. Once useful skills and ideas could be copied, access to culture could matter alongside ordinary genetic inheritance.
That is the book's second replicator move. Culture is no longer just decoration on a gene-built human.
Exactly, though may have matters. I call the proposed feedback mimetic driving. Better imitators could acquire more successful practices, and that could favor capacities that improved imitation further.
Including bigger brains and language. That is a very large claim to hang on copying other people.
Is deliberately ambitious. Human brains are costly to grow and maintain, developmentally burdensome, and childbirth is risky, so the book asks whether familiar explanations fully account for that expense.
Give us the ground-level version before the brain becomes a grand evolutionary billboard.
Think of a difficult stone tool tradition. If a technique is too complex to reinvent reliably alone, someone who can closely copy an accomplished maker gains a practical advantage from accumulated culture.
Then imitation is not merely watching somebody crack a nut, it is preserving a technique across people and time.
Yes. The hypothesis is that increasingly capable imitation, language use, and perhaps social preferences for skilled cultural transmitters formed a feedback loop with the memes being transmitted.
We should put a bright caution label on that loop, right?
Absolutely. Meme-driven brain expansion and related claims about mate choice are speculative reconstructions, not established findings. Tool use, foraging, and social intelligence remain viable rival explanations.
Language then becomes more than a useful human invention. In this lens, it is excellent replication infrastructure.
That is the reframing. Discrete words and grammar can make cultural information more stable and easier to pass on, while speech extends its reach beyond what one person can demonstrate directly.
And once words leave mouths, the copying apparatus gets suspiciously efficient.
Writing, print, telecommunications, computers, and the internet increase storage, standardization, fidelity, and reach. The book treats these as developments that let memes travel horizontally among many people, rather than only down family lines.
Horizontal transmission is the key mischief. An idea can sweep through people who never reproduce and skip neatly past the family tree.
Right. Cultural success can become partly detached from biological reproduction, although genes and culture still interact in messy, mixed ways rather than occupying separate worlds.
The book predates today's platforms, but the basic question survives. What gets amplified because it travels well?
Yes, with the historical limitation kept in view. Its examples and forecasts belong to a late 20th century communication setting. But the distinction between reach and value remains the important analytical tool.
Where does that tool get uncomfortable? Religion is an obvious candidate, but also a room full of rakes.
The book considers religions as possible memeplexes, clusters of ideas, rituals, texts, commitments, institutions, emotional rewards, and defenses against doubt that can reinforce one another's transmission.
That does not mean a religion is false, harmful, or explained only by its ability to reproduce itself.
Precisely. A meme's eye account separates transmission advantage from truth or benefit. It does not settle those questions, and reducing moral, religious, or technological life to copying alone would explain too little. That tension is where the framework becomes most illuminating and most vulnerable to challenge.
We've given memes a lot of power, shaping culture, perhaps even shaping the humans who copy them. Does the book finally give us a tiny executive in the skull, wearing a name tag that says self?
It argues almost the reverse. The apparent continuous inner controller is treated as a constructed narrative rather than a single central agent directing the brain.
And this is where the word self-plex enters, which sounds friendly until it starts rearranging the furniture. What is it?
A self-plex is a mutually reinforcing complex of identity-linked memes, beliefs, preferences, possessions, commitments, and stories about who one is. They hang together and gain extra protection when they are experienced as mine.
So saying, I'm the kind of person who believes this, does more than report a view. It wraps the view in bubble wrap.
That is the proposed mechanism. When a claim fuses with self-image, criticism can feel less like an invitation to revise and more like an attack on the person, which may make defense and repetition more likely.
Give me a normal life version, not someone yelling at strangers online.
Imagine a person whose identity includes being a careful parent, a serious environmentalist, or a committed skeptic. A disputed claim associated with that identity may be defended partly because its loss would disrupt a valued self-description, even if the person is otherwise open to evidence.
That seems plausible, but it also seems like ordinary psychology with a meme sticker slapped on it. What does the book add?
It shifts the question from only why an individual holds a belief to how an identity-linked cluster gains stability and transmission. The suggestion is that beliefs tied to me recruit attention, argument, memory, and social display in ways that help the cluster persist.
And the evidence for dismantling the inner captain?
The book draws on distributed brain processing, philosophical criticism of a unitary self, and Libet-style findings in which unconscious preparation can precede reported conscious intention. Together, these challenge a simple picture of conscious authorship, but they do not deliver a complete theory of consciousness.
Important break there. Libet-style experiments are contested and some processing comes first is not the same as free will has been vaporized.
Exactly. The book's conclusions about free will, consciousness, and suffering reach beyond the evidence for cultural transmission, and it acknowledges that there is no comprehensive theory of consciousness on offer.
Let's press the bigger objection. Genes have identifiable structures and fairly formal copying mechanisms. Cultural items blur, mutate in retelling, and get actively remade by people.
That is a serious challenge. Meme boundaries, where memes reside, how faithfully they copy, and how much independent agency people retain are unresolved. If cultural transmission is too reconstructive, the gene analogy may lose explanatory force.
Then what keeps this from explaining everything after the fact? If any popular idea counts as a successful meme, the theory has purchased a very large umbrella.
My argument in the book is that memetics should be judged as a testable explanatory framework against alternatives and by predictions that could fail. Calling something a meme is not enough. The framework must show that transmission dynamics explain more than accounts based on cognition, incentives, institutions, or genetic advantage.
So the sweeping story about culture driving bigger brains, language, altruism, and religion is not a settled master key.
No. Those are provocative hypotheses or historical reconstructions, and rival explanations remain viable. Culture, genes, individual learning, and social institutions can all matter in the same case.
Still, the book leaves one useful little splinter in the mind. Before sharing a claim, ask not merely, is this compelling? But is it compelling because it is easy to copy?
Yes. Separate repeatability from truth, usefulness, and humane consequences. A vivid slogan, a fear-laden warning, or an identity-flattering claim can travel efficiently without thereby deserving belief or adoption.
And the attention practices near the end? Are we meant to meditate the memes out of our heads?
No. The book tentatively suggests that present-focused attention may weaken self-centered narrative competition, but it is not presented as a clinically established remedy, and the causal claims are speculative.
should pick this up, with eyebrows raised but intact?
Readers interested in cultural evolution, media, mind, and an intentionally contentious extension of Darwinian thinking will find it stimulating. This conversation leaves out the book's fuller arguments and evidentiary disputes, which is precisely where a reader can decide whether the meme lens illuminates culture or overreaches.
Let's land this without turning every catchy phrase into a tiny biological organism in a trench coat. What is the book's cleanest takeaway?
My argument in the book is that culture may evolve through memes, copied information that varies, persists, and competes for further copying. That asks us to explain an idea's spread not only by what it does for people, nay, but by what helps it get repeated.
And the chain letter test was useful here. An idea can travel brilliantly while being false, useless, or actively annoying.
Exactly. Stories, tunes, skills, instructions, and practices can be culturally successful for reasons such as memorability, emotion, trust, or a convenient copying mechanism. That is a different question from whether they are accurate, beneficial, or humane.
Then the book turns the lens back on us. Perhaps imitation did not merely fill human brains with culture, but helped shape the kind of brains humans became.
That is the proposed meme, gene feedback loop, or mimetic driving. Difficult copied traditions, such as stone tool skills and later language, may have made capacities for imitation and transmission increasingly consequential.
But consequential is doing some heavy lifting. Big brains, language, and mate choice do not suddenly become solved cases because memes enter the room.
They do not. The reconstruction is deliberately ambitious and remains speculative. Competing explanations for human brain evolution and language are viable, and the relevant selection pressures are not directly established.
The middle stretch also made media look less like neutral plumbing. Speech, writing, print, and electronic networks expand the reach and fidelity of what gets copied, often sideways across people rather than down family lines.
Yes, while the book's late 20th century technology examples should be read in their historical setting, its broader point is that communication systems can amplify cultural replication without proving that every technology or institution exists for that reason alone.
And then comes the slightly unsettling final move, the self-plex. Our sense of mine may bind beliefs, preferences, possessions, and commitments into a defendable identity bundle.
The book links that proposal to distributed brain processes and evidence suggesting some action preparation occurs unconsciously. But it does not supply a complete theory of consciousness, and interpretations of Libet-style findings, as well as claims about self-plexes, are contested.
So the practical habit is modest. When an idea feels irresistible or personally insulting, ask two separate questions. Is it easy to transmit, and is it true, useful, or kind?
Read the meme machine. If you want a forceful, provocative Darwinian account of culture, media, mind, and identity, and are willing to test it rather than join it, we have left out much of its detailed argument and evidentiary dispute. Blackmore presents memetics as a controversial framework that should stand or fall against alternatives and evidence.